गुरु ब्रह्मा गुरु विष्णु गुरु देवो महेश्वर गुरु साक्षात् परब्रह्म तस्मै श्री So tomorrow starts chapter 6 in Merging with Shiva, Wisdom's Path. To the awakened mystic, there is only one mind. There is no your mind and my mind, just one mind finished, completed in all stages of manifestation. Man's individual awareness flows through the mind as the traveler treads the globe. Just as the free citizen moves from city to city and country to country, awareness moves through the multitude of forms in the mind. Well, that's an interesting concept to ponder. Just one mind, finished, completed in all stages of manifestation. So we don't usually look at it like that. When it comes to the mind, the various states of consciousness that we experience, we tend to see one state evolving or changing into another. We don't tend to see it this way, where all states of consciousness always exist. We also tend to think of it as we create the state of consciousness. And before we get into the sense of striving, you know, we're sitting in meditation, striving real hard, in the sense that we have to create this deep state of consciousness. If we strive hard enough, we're bound to create it. But it already exists. That's the point. All states of consciousness always exist, so we don't have to create anything by an effort of the will. In fact, an effort of the will can obscure a subtle state of consciousness. The mere idea of striving hard is a certain motion in the mind which can cover up something that's subtle. So taking this idea is it's already there, we just have to find it. Don't have to create it. All states of consciousness are already there. We just have to find it or relax into it or figure out how to get from one place to another, and there it is. There is no your mind in my mind. So we also tend to do that. We see people and we label them. I like this person, I don't like that person. This person is this way, that person is that way. We're not really seeing things accurately. There's just the mind, and we can all experience whatever part of it we choose to, or life chooses for us, if we don't make our own choices. But clearly it's just the mind, so one person's mind isn't different than another person's mind. And someone, that's why a guru can understand things clearly, because there's only one mind. It's like watching children grow up. You know, they're not all different. There's a certain similarity there. You know, when you're 6 years old, you do things one way. When you're 12 years old, you're quite different. Why? Because there's only one mind, there's one pattern, and everyone follows along in a similar way to a large degree, particularly in growing up, where we get more differentiation is after we're grown up and what we do at that point. But the process of growing up shows very nicely the different ages and what kids naturally do at different ages. How there's just one mind. There's not your mind and my mind. Before we meditate, review the cycles of our life and erroneously conclude that the mind changes, that it evolves. Review joy one moment and despair the next. And because we feel so different in these states, assume we have changed. We grow up and look back on our childhood and again see the appearance of change. Through meditation, however, we observe that we have not changed at all. Awareness becomes our real identity, and it is pure and changeless. It was the same at 7 years of age as it is today. It is the same in happiness as it is in sadness. Pure awareness cannot change. It is simply aware. Therefore, you are right now the totality of yourself. You never were different. And you never will be. You are perfect at this very moment. Change is only a seeming concept created through false identification with the experiences we have in various areas of the one mind. So that's an interesting meditation. The idea of finding that which hasn't changed. But we were talking about growing up, so what is it that was the same in us at 6 years of age, 12 years of age, 18 years of age, and where we are today? It's our awareness. It hasn't changed. So finding that which is the same is an interesting meditation. So there's a famous meditation, Ramana Maharishi's Who Am I meditation. So an interesting, which it relates to this. Normally you say, I am this and I am that. I am 6 years old, I am 12 years old, I am happy, I am sad. I am here in Kauai, I am somewhere else. You always add something after I am, right? But if you can go, I am, and don't keep going, instead of I am here, just say I am, and you're looking at awareness. So that's one answer to the question, who am I? We're awareness, we're the experiencer, we're not what we experience, and we don't change, which is the idea here. We only think we change because of the false identification with the experiences we have in various areas of the one mind. Everything in the world and everything in the mind is as it should be, in a perfect state of evolution. Superconsciously, we can clearly see this through the eyes of our soul. When looking at it through the instinctive intellectual mind, we don't see this perfection. It is as if we have blinders on both sides of our eyes, like a donkey. The carrot of desire dangles right in front of our nose when we are in the instinctive intellectual mind, and we are going after it, step at a time, with our blinders on. We have to go in and in and in and reach an expanded state of awareness and gain the mountaintop consciousness where we perceive there is no injustice in the world. There is not one wrong thing. All is in perfect order and rhythm in Shiva's cosmic dance. So we talked about that a few weeks ago, that idea that everything is perfect. So a lot of our frustrations in life come because we're not able to accept conditions as they are. We want them to be different. Usually we want other people to be different, right? But we're always just fine. We're the ones that are messed up. We want other people to be different. We want them to relate to us differently. And because of that, we're frustrated. And the frustration is a disturbance in the mind. The opposite of this point of view, which is the ability to accept people and conditions as they are, doesn't mean we don't want to make them better, but it means we're not frustrated by the way they are. The way they are makes sense to us. Okay, this is the way it should be. It shouldn't be different. Particularly when difficulties come our way, it can be hard to accept that this is the way it should be. It's easier when good fortune comes our way, right? Open the mail and there's a big check somehow. A bonus from work. Oh, this is great. But, you know, get a big bill in the mail. Whoops. Hard to think that things are perfect. But either way, they are. And everything is the way it is because of what's been set in motion in the past. Our big opportunity is in how we create the future by how we live in the present. Ability to impact the present is there, but it's much more limited and it's harder. But the ability to create the future, we have total flexibility there. We create the future how we want to by how we live in the present. Should we acquire the ability to identify as the experiencer instead of the experience, the true and valid nature of awareness and its patterns of movement in the mind become evident. We see the mind as a total manifestation containing all of the past and future evolutions in the eternal now. The mind is vast in its combinations of time, space, and form, contains every vibration from subtle to gross. Awareness is free to travel in the mind according to our knowledge, our discipline, and our ability to detach from the objects of awareness and see ourselves as the experience of awareness itself. Thank you. This explains many of the so-called mysteries of life. So that expands our concept even more. So everything that will be in the future has to exist in the present, in the mind. The computer that will be designed and created 20 years from now has to already exist. So Buddha is saying nothing doesn't exist, it's just found in the mind. To go to the place in the mind where it already exists. That's what Buddha is saying. We see the mind as a total manifestation containing all of the past and future evolutions in the eternal realm. So some people, that's how they can predict the future. They just go to where the future is. And they're not that distinct from the present. To them, they have the ability to go and look at something in the future. Well, it exists in the mind. There are people with the ability to look back into the past and ahead to the future accurately and in detail. That feat is understood clearly in the light of awareness traveling through the mind. Sounds like I'm just explaining this. Entire mind exists right now, past and future included. These psychically talented individuals have trained their awareness to flow into areas of the mind that are unavailable to the average person. They go into the mind itself to view these phenomena. Similarly, ESP, mind reading, and other mystical wonders are illumined by the knowledge that there is only one mind and all phases of it are open to the spiritually awakened person. And we just commented on that. Sometimes you do that, you know it's coming up, so jump in. Observation is the first faculty to appear in the awakening of the superconscious regions. Observation, when perceptively performed, is cultivated by abstinence from excessive talk. Talk dissipates the energies of the aura and of the vital body of man. A mystic generally does not talk very much, for his intuition works through reason, but does not use the processes of reason. Any intuitive breakthrough will be quite reasonable, but it does not use the processes of reason. Reason takes time. Superconsciousness acts in the now. All superconscious knowing comes in a flash out of the nowhere. Intuition is more direct than reason and far more accurate. Therefore, the mystic does not ask many questions or enter into lengthy conversations. So this is an important point, observation, and a good way of judging your observation is to go walking with a child, say a child, maybe, you know, 7 to 10 years old, you would know better than I, but before the intellect really turns on a lot in the child, child is extremely observant and will point out things, you know, what's this, what's that, that you don't even see. And how can that be? You know, the child's more observant than you are. Shouldn't you be more observant than the child? No. Isn't this an ability which improves with age? You would think so, right? You can outreason the child. But you can't, usually we don't out-observe a child. Why is that? Well, it's because we have thoughts going on in our head. We're thinking more than children are. And so that thought, part of our awareness, goes into our thoughts. We're not seeing with 100% of our faculties. We're seeing with maybe 50% of our faculties, and 50% are wrapped up in our thoughts to some degree. Whereas a child isn't thinking, hasn't turned that on yet very much, and so 100% of awareness is in observation. So it's a very interesting practice to judge your observance. So what is the key? Well, the key is not to think unnecessarily. We don't want the mind going all the time. And one of the ways of harnessing that is by harnessing our speech. Speech is more evident than thinking. So therefore it's easier to harness our speech. And so the key word here is excessive talk. Abstinence from excessive talk, not abstinence from talk. But abstinence from talk is okay, but you know, on special occasions. But social conversation is part of life. And otherwise it creates tension. You don't say anything, don't say enough, you know, it creates a tension. So excessive talk is just rambling on unnecessarily about frivolous things. It's, as Guru points out, it dissipates our energy. The energy could go higher into more creative thinking or into intuition. If we excessively talk, but we're using it at a fairly mundane level. We're using up a lot of energy. And if we talk excessively, it also means we think excessively. So likewise, if we back up on excessive talk, we back up on excessive thinking, and we become more observant, where our mind becomes quieter. So that's the important thing. Because we need to be observant to experience intuition. Intuition is there. But there's too much distraction, there's too much noise going on in our head, usually to identify it. So it's like a radio that's always on, but it's turned very low. So to hear it, I have to get rid of all the other noise, right? say, oh, there it is. Oh, I like that sound. I like that song. Trying to hear it when all the other noise goes away. So that's like intuition. It's on, but it's quiet and easily covered up by the other noise that's going on inside of us. So therefore we need to quiet down enough to hear it, and then it's there. Ponder over this and apply it to yourself. Well, there's one more point here. Therefore, the mystic does not ask many questions or enter into lengthy conversations. Why is that? Well, the mystic is trying to get a deeper answer than reason would give, trying to understand something in a profound way. So if you throw it out into reason, you can stop the process. In other words, if you want an answer to something and you ask someone and they give it to you, you've stopped the process, right? You're not going to keep thinking about it normally, unless you don't like the answer. Normally say, well, that sounds reasonable. But if you want the most profound answer on a mystical subject, you have to get it from your own intuition. So that's what this is saying. You're asking yourself the question, and therefore you don't end up in a lot of lengthy conversations. You're asking yourself the question and trying to find the answer in meditation, which can take a while. Because for most people, intuition is delayed. It's not instantaneous. You ask a question, you don't instantaneously get the answer. Most people don't. You ask the question, you might get the answer in a few days or in a few hours. Throw the question in the subconscious, let it bounce around a while, and the answer can come. Gurudeva calls that sub-superconscious. Superconscious working through the subconscious is not immediate. Superconscious is immediate. You ask a question, you get an answer. Sub-superconscious, there's a time delay. Well, sometimes the same principle we were looking at before relates to what we're trying to are. The answer is right there in front of us, but we're trying too hard. So this kind of practice works well on something that's black and white, you know, something that's right or wrong, such as mathematics or logic or something. You're trying to solve a problem and you can't solve it. You go away, come back in 15 minutes, and the answer is self-evident. Well, what was going on? Well, you were trying too hard. The mere act of trying was blocking the answer from coming. So that can happen. So sometimes the best way to find an answer is to take a walk or something, come back, try again, you know, regroup. So we're not taught that, though. So you just push ahead. Use our willpower, we can solve this. But if the willpower doesn't work, then take a break and relax, and maybe the answer will come to you afterwards. So that's sub-superconscious.